All too often we come to the meditation straight from the narrative of the day. And then the narrative becomes part of the meditation, where it interferes with the mind settling down. If you manage to do something klutzy during the day, then if your meditation is not going well, that becomes part of that same narrative. Something upsetting or disturbing happened, it becomes part of the narrative of the meditation too. This is why it's good to start the meditation with thoughts of all beings. Open your mind to infinity for a while. As I said earlier, it's the way the Buddha approached the night of his awakening. He started with his own narratives. And if you think you have stories from the day, he had aeons. And the question came, why were there so many different narratives, so many different lives? There were Brahmins in the time who said that whatever you were in this lifetime, you're going to be in the next lifetime. But that obviously wasn't the case because he had changed identities so many times. There's actually one strange belief that all beings after they died went to the moon, fed off the moon, which is why the moon looks so mottled. It's being eaten, and then they would fall as rain, and then turn into plants, and then depending on what animal ate them, they would become that animal. That was obviously not the case. So the question was, what determined all these different levels of being? So we got out of the individual narratives and started looking at the cosmos as a whole. Extended his mind in all directions to all beings. Found that they too had many lifetimes. But he began to see a pattern, that they went up and down depending on the skillfulness or lack of skillfulness in their actions. Now he saw that it was a complex pattern. Sometimes you would do something skillful in this lifetime and go to a bad destination next time around, either because of something you had done before, or because of some bad action you did afterwards, or because you had wrong view of death. And vice versa. You can do bad things in this lifetime and go to a good destination next time, either because you had a fund of good karma from the past, or you changed your ways, refrained from harmful actions, or developed right view of death. But the basic principle held. Just because you escaped a bad destination for some bad actions in this lifetime didn't mean those bad actions didn't wait around and lead to pain or suffering someplace down the line, or vice versa. So he saw that it was through your actions that you shape your life. It's through your intentions based on your views, and your views based on who you respected, whether you respected the noble ones or not, whether you'd have respected your greed, aversion, and delusion more. You determined the course of your lives. But the fact that what you held as a view at the moment of death alerted him to the fact that actions in the present moment could have a lot of power. So it was with that understanding then in the third watch of the night, he focused on his present actions. What kind of views, what kind of intentions would lead outside of the cycle? Because as part of his second knowledge, he had seen that the cycle just goes around and around. It's not really a circle. A lot of complex feedback loops. But it goes nowhere. You go up and then you go down. Then you go up again and down again. And in some cases, it's almost as if like samsara were a sick joke. You do lots of good things. You're generous. You're virtuous. You get rewards for that in a future lifetime. But then enjoying those rewards, you eat away at your own good qualities. You get lazy again. Get impatient again, and you fall. So he went it out. So the question was, what kind of intentions, what kind of actions now? What kind of views right now would lead to the way out? And as the answer to that question came, You saw that the way out was to see things in terms of the Four Noble Truths, to understand what suffering is, what he was doing right now to cause suffering right now. Now you could stop doing those things. But there's a path of practice. You didn't just stop. There's a path of practice you had to follow. That was the Eightfold Path. So I followed the path, completed all the duties with regard to the Four Noble Truths, fully comprehended suffering, abandoned its cause, realized cessation by developing the path. That's how we gain awakening. So it's good to reflect on the pattern of that night, going from his narratives to infinity, the cosmos at large, and then back to the present moment. So it's good to start each meditation with thoughts that spread out as far as you can think. The Buddha has you think about all beings in two major contexts. The first, of course, has to do with the Brahma Viharas, starting with goodwill. You wish all beings to be happy. Sometimes you hear the word metta translated as loving kindness. But that doesn't seem to do justice to the attitude. The Buddha has a separate word for love. Pali has a separate word for love, which is bhema. And he doesn't trust that. Because as he said, sometimes love leads to love, sometimes love leads to hatred, sometimes hatred leads to love, or hatred to hatred. Love leading to love means there's somebody you love, someone else treats them well. You're going to love that second person. Love leading to hatred, someone mistreats someone you love, you're really going to hate that person. Hatred leads to love. If somebody you dislike, somebody else mistreats that person, you're going to like the person who's mistreated you, the object of your hatred. Then hatred leading to hatred. You hate somebody. Somebody treats them well. You're going to hate that second person. It's all very arbitrary. It's not very trustworthy. What the Buddha trusts more is the simple wish, may all beings be happy. Think of that second sutta we chanted just now, where he had taught how to express goodwill for all the snakes and all the creepy things, and then said, may you depart. In other words, it's not in the nature of things that snakes and human beings can get along well through close proximity. They're better off if they keep their, to their separate ways. A lot of human beings like that, too. So goodwill or metta doesn't mean that you're going to love somebody. Sometimes it means simply respecting their desire for happiness and hoping that they can look after their own happiness. May they all look after themselves with ease. And although metta is meant to be a limitless attitude, the Buddha does talk about it as a restraint. He talks about it as a determination that you keep in mind. Now, if limitless goodwill were innate in all of us, you wouldn't have to do any of these things. You just express your innate nature and that would be it. The problem is that we as human beings tend to be partial in our metta. Some people we like, some people we don't like. Some people we wish well, some people we wish ill. So to lift our minds from our human state to our level of the Brahmas, it takes work. It's a determination. You have to make up your mind. You're going to do it. And then you have to keep that in mind so that you don't forget. And you have to restrain yourself from any impulses that would go against goodwill for all. Which means you also have to protect your goodwill. That's the meaning of that passage, by the way, where the Buddha is talking about the mother's love for her child. Sometimes we hear it interpreted as, just as a mother cherishes her only child, so you should cherish all beings. But the Pali doesn't say that. He says, just as a mother would guard with her life her only child, in the same way you should guard your goodwill for all beings. That's something different. Because you're going to be meeting with lots of beings who are not especially lovable. But you've got to have goodwill for them. The image the Buddha gives is of bandits who've come to grab you, pin you down. They're sawing you up in little pieces with a two-handled saw. He says, even a case like that, you have to have goodwill, starting with them and then from them spreading to the whole cosmos. Otherwise, if you let ill will take over your mind at that point, you'll be reborn in line with that ill will. And that'll lead to a life that's not especially auspicious life. Whereas if you protect your metta, you may lose your life, but you protected a treasure inside that will lift the level of your mind. So as we reflect on goodwill, we realize it doesn't stop with just thoughts of, may all living beings be happy, happy, happy. It's an attitude that you have to protect and you have to maintain and bring into all of your encounters with others. This is where it's good to think of some of the other images the Buddha gives of thinking of other beings. One is that if you see someone who's really wealthy, powerful, has every advantage in life, Buddha says, remember that you have been there too. See someone who's really poor, destitute, suffering from a disease, you've been there as well. These thoughts can, one, induce a feeling of fellow feeling. And everybody you meet, you've probably been like that person in the past. So that's something you have in common. So you shouldn't be jealous of those who are more powerful. You shouldn't look down on those who are more miserable than you. You should have empathetic joy for the first, compassion for the second. But also the Buddha says when you start thinking about that, it should give rise to a sense of sangvega. All the things that are possible. This relates to another passage where, as you think about all animals, just focus on the common animals, he says, and you realize how variegated they are. Everything from tiny, tiny insects to whales, and everything in between. And not only the creatures we know of now, but all the creatures that have been in the past, that we know only through fossils. He says, just think about how variegated the animal world is. He says, your mind is more variegated than that. In other words, it's because of the mind that these animals have taken on those shapes, taken on those characteristics. And your mind has those potentials as well. That's a scary thought. Do you want to go back there? Well, no. So watch out for any thoughts of your mind that would go in that direction. And John Mon once said that he, on recollecting his past lives, could remember there was a period where for 500 lives he was reborn as a dog because his mind was satisfied with the pleasures of dogs. And so what happened to him, it's probably happened to us. And if we don't get our act together, we're headed back in that direction. This is where thinking about all animals leads beyond goodwill, empathetic joy, compassion, equanimity, and goes to sangvega. A sense of having enough of all this and wanting to get out. That gives you good motivation for meditating, getting the mind under control. regardless of what the narratives of the day may have been. Think about that reflection that we have. Sometimes I'm subject to aging, illness, and death. Separation. Whatever I do, that will I fall heir. And the original sutta doesn't stop there. It goes on to remind you that all living beings are subject to these things. So no matter where you would go in the cosmos, no matter what level, you'd be subject to these things. The Buddha says when you think about that, it gives rise to a sense of sangweka, and from the sangweka, a desire to get on the path. So it's good to think about these things. Air out your mind with infinity every time you sit down to meditate. It'll give you a much better perspective on what you're doing and why.